It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022, returning MOI Global Instructor Alirio Sendrea, Head of Research at Invexcel, a multifamily office based in Spain. Alirio is a generalist investor in European equities with close to two decades of experience in financial services, shipping, information services, alcoholic beverages, and business services, working with entrepreneurial families and leading global companies. He's also a CFA charter holder. Alirio, I've greatly enjoyed your presentations in the past, and I know they've been of great value to MOI Global members as well. So I very much look forward to your remarks today. Please go ahead.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me again. Please don't expect what happened last year, because I had a lot of luck had to do with that recommendation. A few words on Invexcel. We're a family business, as already John shared. We invest and buy family and close friends' money. We basically eat what we cook. In public markets, we focus our investment efforts in two SICAVs that concentrate investments in European and small and mid caps. Let's go direct into the idea. I will speak in today about Merlin Properties. It's a Spanish REIT with a diversified portfolio of commercial real estate. It's a 3.7 billion euros market cap company. Major shareholders are Banco Santander with 24% stake, and shareholder number two is Manuel Lau, which is a well-known Spanish entrepreneur with 8% stake. There are also several funds in the middle, but I'd like to highlight company management, the CEO and the COO, their stake, which could be seen as a small, but at market value represents a more or less 12 million euros bet for each of these guys. And as far as I know, more than 50% of the company staff owns shares in the company. Okay, so this is a heavily discounted company. Let me walk you through main numbers. Let's begin with blue bars, which are company reported numbers as of June 30 this year, adjusted for extraordinary dividend paid in August. Let's look those numbers from left to right. This is a company with a gross asset value of 11.6 billion euros, with a net debt of 3.6 billion euros. Company NAV is around 8 billion euros. Market cap is 3.5 billion euros, which is a 54% discount to NAV. That is the red bars. Let's look at the red bars from right to left. These are the numbers implied by market value. From that 3.7 billion euros, we take it as the proper NAV of the company. And assuming that net debt remains equal, market implies gross asset value is just above 7 billion euros, which is close to 40% lower than reported. Why that? We feel that first, this is a Spanish company. Worse, it is a Spanish real estate company. And many still remember our huge and well-deserved real estate bubble from 2007. It is diversified, and many investors prefer to invest in pure plays. Then 20% of gross asset value is represented from shopping centers business, which is a dying business to many, and also has a concentration of lease contract maturities, higher than average risk of increasing vacancy as a consequence. And some others also, is not here, but some shareholders and investors I speak to, they don't like the major shareholder for different reasons. Some because see overhand risk, others because they don't feel comfortable with those guys as a partner. Here's what I'm going to walk you through in the idea. I will talk about the company, some history, management, then walk you through the portfolio, then speak about the main risks to our end and how we approach valuation of this company. Let's speak to you about some company history management first. Okay, this is a young company founded in 2014, taking advantage of a new Spanish REIT fiscal regime and bottom prices after real estate bubble. First acquisition was a large portfolio of banking branches from BBVA back in 2014. This was a long-term inflation-linked contract. Then they went in a rush to acquire quality assets, two large corporate acquisitions, one of a travel construction company and the other was acquired to a syndicate of banks that took the original company as the previous owners defaulted. They also bought options for land plots, for logistics developments, and many individual assets. Acquisitions were good to get high quality assets at a discount, but came with some non-core assets in residential, hotel, high street retail, and low quality offices. So the company had a period of digestion, selling many of those non-core assets, and they have been doing so on average at a premium to reported value. They have advanced a lot in this front, but still there are some assets to be delivered, some sales to be delivered. They also invested in refurbishing office buildings and shopping centers and developing logistics and land plots. In 2019, they acquired a minority stake in DCN, which is a major project for development on the northern area of Madrid City. It's going to be the largest urban regeneration project in the whole Europe. Recently entered a data center business by developing greenfields. And this year they sold the portfolio of BBVA branches that saw the life of the company. When they originated the company in 2014, that portfolio was sold 100% this year for a very value accretive transaction. They sold a premium to real estate value given the financial value embedded in the assets due to inflation in contract. A few words on management. While very young project, it was launched and is run by a seasoned team. Given short life, it's easy to pull interesting numbers. I show here some equity capital provided in 2014 to 2016 by shareholders, dividends paid, and how this compares to NAV reporters. And numbers speak for themselves. Merlin is managed by very talented operators. They have already returned approximately 30% of equity capital raised only by paying dividends. And value creation has been massive if you take for granted the numbers provided by external valuation companies, which are behind the NAV reporters. Let's go to Merlin portfolio. Let's go through it. Let's begin with office. Well, first, let me share you some flavor on how it is the portfolio. The portfolio has been in continuous evolution since incorporation. Asset split has been changing because of corporate activity, acquisition, sale of non-core stuff. Today it is, as is shown in the left-hand side graph, other here, that 7% of other is mainly two large hotels in prime office buildings in Madrid and Barcelona, and there are some other minor assets. So it's close to 60% offices. The number two is 20% of shopping centers and logistics and this other. That is mainly office stuff. Target to 2025 is for growing share of logistics and the new data centers business. And both offices and shopping centers will be reduced in size. Currently, assets are located 90% in Spain and 10% in Portugal. As per management, it should continue to be the case in the future. The most important city for the company is Madrid, followed by Barcelona and Lisbon. Why that? Because these are the cities that concentrate most of the business activity in the region and have the more liquid real estate markets. Now let's move to the office portfolio. Madrid makes 3/4 of the office portfolio. Why Madrid? It's because it's the largest and more liquid market in Iberia. In round numbers, Madrid office market is 2 times the market of Barcelona and 4 times Lisbon. It is the most vibrant region. We have a pro-business regional government. We have positive trends in population, economic activity is far better than Spain's average. We enjoy good weather. The city is attracting talent. And optically, initially could be seen as a large, as a market with large capacity, but it is very old state on average. So it's tighter than many people think. And even more after many years of underinvestments and assets aging. Actually, by 2019, the market was clearly tilted towards demand. Berlin saw the opportunity back in 2015, 2016, and went for it, gaining scale rapidly by buying companies with good quality assets at very attractive prices. How today's market compares to 2007, you know, because many international investors still see the Spanish real estate sector through that 2007 lens. Well, point number one is that commercial real estate market did bad by then, but the worst by far happened in residential real estate. Basically, we didn't have enough time to screw commercial real estate up too. So how Madrid office market compares? Prime rents haven't moved back to peak prices, same with valuations. Today, you don't see as many cranes as 15 years ago. A good measure of this is then the level of new supply, which is less than half that of 2007. And investment is much lower, even to pre-COVID levels, and have nothing to do with the levels of the years 2004 to 2007. Okay, and consider that today and the previous year, there's an important wave of secondhand properties and refurbishments in this investment number. This ties supply-demand conditions for good assets, helped obviously by ECB policies, have decreased office prime yields to 3.3%. Let me share also a few words on the other two key cities, Barcelona and Lisbon. Barcelona is not that far to Madrid in terms of trends. It's slightly lower in pricing. Prime rents are on average 28 euros per square meter per month, which is still below 2007 peak. It is an interesting market there because some capacity was destroyed in previous years, so assets being converted to hotels and residential. But in relative terms, there is more supply of new product compared to Madrid. Lisbon is a special case. It is already above 2007 price levels. Rents are now more or less 25 euros per square meter per month. It's a market with office supply issues because occupancy is virtually 100%. Allstate has been reconverted to prime residential. That is because a lot of rich people is moving there for tax reasons. And Lisbon is a city that is becoming some sort of a back office for European companies. But we can't compare today with anything before pre-COVID, I guess, no, because according to many, nobody wants to go to an office anymore. Let's review some key points. Number one is commuting. This might be true for workers commuting on average more than 2 hours a day, but it's not Madrid's case. Average worker here commutes less than an hour. Actually, average is just about 40 minutes, and more than 80% of people commutes less than an hour a day. Other important key point to consider is work from home legislation. Here, the Spanish national government enacted a law including costs to employers for having staff working from home more than 30% of their time. So if you work 1.5 days a week from home, this legislation applies. Companies should provide not only hardware to staff, but compensate employees for utilities, internet, and other costs, which are estimated just above 100 euros per month per employee. But the most cumbersome side of this legislation is the liabilities implication. So if a worker slips through the stairs or gets burned while frying eggs, while working from home, it's considered as an accident at work, which is crazy because legally speaking, the company cannot control the home space of their workers. And if it were the case, no company has the means to do that. So as you may guess, massive adoption has been discouraged. Then you should also consider that Spain and even Madrid are lower wage countries on average, lower wage regions. But this is attracting companies to set operations here, which is good for the city. It happens the same in Barcelona and Lisbon. Office space is far crowded than in other countries. Madrid's average office density is 9 square meter per employee, which is 100 square feet on average, more or less per employee. Including this number includes hallways, bathrooms, etc. Compare that to average US office, which as far as I know is 14 square meters per employee, 150 square feet. Some legislators are now beginning to ask to increase this number because of health reasons after COVID. We don't expect this really to change that much in Spain, neither in Portugal in the short term, but won't get worse either, as the companies are investing to make their staff happier at the office. And here we're not talking on the other side of the table, which are the employers. No, not all are keen to have a dispersed workforce. It may be good for some activities, but adverse for others. You may have seen that Apple is having fun with that and and also Elon Musk, that famous entrepreneur influencer of our days, asking Tesla workers to work from home but after working 40 hours in the office. So I think the pandemic brought more flexibility, but it's not the end of the office. So we don't see this as a black or white stuff, but more gray. By the way, Merlin has its own flex offering. Approximately 1.5% of their office space in Madrid and Barcelona. It's managed with their own flex brand. They reported 72% occupancy, still recovering from pre-COVID levels. 70% of that space is rented by large corporates. And the profile of those corporates is one that is already a tenant in a Merlin portfolio. They already have fixed space rented with Merlin and uses the flex offer to manage short-term space demand. Let's move to how the asset locations in Madrid. Merlin has really good locations, except for some support locations in the A1 highway area, which are the black dots in the north of the city. Sorry, by the way, because I didn't find most up-to-date graph here, but the assets are more north have already been sold, okay? And these assets in the A1 highway area explain a big chunk of Merlin's vacancy. Actually, 8% of the overall company vacancy is concentrated here. Okay, remember that they acquired entire portfolio through M&A and some were not best quality assets. But why those assets in the north of the city? Madrid office market has moved over more than a century from south to north, and it is a trend that still continues evolving. Okay. Merlin has positioned themselves for that play. There is a large project under development in the area. I'll give you some more details in a moment. Infrastructure is being improved as we speak. Actually, I've been suffering those works for the last 2 years. And occupancy is improving because some tenants are positioning themselves for this. It will take time, obviously. And I'm optimistic, but not very optimistic, because Merlin will also have to compete with some added supply in the area, new supply for brand new buildings. Well, frankly speaking, those assets are not the best in the portfolio, but they are not dead at all. They have some value. What is the future in the office portfolio? Again, Madrid is very important here. For the very near future, the company is finishing the refurbishment of Trine CBD assets with very attractive yields on cost. There are a couple of more refurbishment projects to be delivered, but they haven't shown the numbers. That's why I don't share anything here. They will continue selling assets to improve the quality of the overall portfolio and make room in the mid to long term to the Cherry of the K, which is a project, the project I already told you, Madrid Nuevo Norte, the name of that project. Madrid Nuevo Norte is a 2 million square meter development in the north area of the city, of which 800,000 square meters will be for residential and public infrastructures, and 1.2 million square meters will be for office space. And Merlin has a 14% stake in the company that will develop those offices. The name of that company is DCN, Distrito Castellana Norte in Spanish. This district will be very close to city center, just 3 kilometers away of city center, will be very close to the airport, and will be developed around a large rail station, which serves as the north gate of the city. It's also located between two important beltways, and will improve communication between several northern residential neighborhoods of middle-class, high-middle-class workers. The city has already started the works. The first large infrastructure improvement will be delivered by year end, thanks God. The office works will begin by 2024, and will span, deliveries will span from 2024 to 2040s. Merlin acquired this, entered this project at a very attractive price, and yields on cost using conservative assumptions. Seems really good. Now is the term of the most hated asset class in real estate, which is shopping centers. Merlin has been very open. They have 3 non-core assets, of which really only one is really spoiled. Value of those assets make around 5% of the shopping mall portfolio. So it's not something that it's really material. No matter that, overall, the portfolio is working. Compared to pre-COVID levels, occupancy is not bad. Actually, it's slightly above 94%. In 2009, was 93. I don't remember exactly, but just below 94. Footfall hasn't got back. It's still more or less 10% less than pre-COVID, but both sales and rents have recovered. So the effort ratio for tenants is just the same as in 2019. When thinking about real estate in Iberia, I invite you to bear in mind some important aspects. Number one is that we don't have as many shopping centers like in other mature countries. I've read research, for example, in the US, where there are many 100,000 people towns with 3 shopping malls. So it's not the case here. Then you should consider habits, which are way different. The average Spanish and Portuguese houses are much smaller in size than in other developed countries. It is not new because we have better weather and spend a lot of time out. We have lunch and dinner and meet friends in a terrace, and we go to the shopping mall for a walk, a beer, and given we're already there, we go to the supermarket and buy whatever else we're missing. And lastly, brick and mortar is not dead, or it seems not to be dead. Maybe secondary streets, periphery assets are suffering more, but retailers want to showcase their stuff and they want to interact with people. Shopping centers are good for that. The next real estate class is what everybody loves, which is logistics. Merlin is the largest logistics real estate owner and operator in Iberia. It's 2 times the size of player number 2. Madrid, again, is the largest exposure, followed by Barcelona, Lisbon, and other secondary but very important distribution hubs in Spain, like Seville, Valencia, Basque Country, and Zaragoza. It is important to have a flavor on e-commerce penetration here in Spain, which is more or less 10-12%, well, according to different sources, because there's no clear figure on this number, but it's supposed to be that. And that compares to more or less 20% in other large EU countries. In Portugal, it's even lower than 10-12%. Marina Barcelona are around 20-25%. It is far for large cities like London, Greater London area. Well, I read many numbers, but it's supposed to be something around 40%. We might never get that high because of our habits, but growth will continue to be the case for a while. Growth prospects, of course, calls for capital, and there's money entering the market. Yields have been compressing as a consequence. No matter that, we still don't see crazy low yields for the moment. Merlin is not buying land plots anymore. Their focus is on developing what they already have. They're showing a lot of discipline here. By the way, with higher interest rates, we now see some interesting things happening. For example, the Spanish airport operator, AENA, launched a first stage of a very large logistics development around Madrid Airport. Merlin was a finalist, but didn't go through because of pricing. The offer was too low for them. The winner of the tender was announced last June, so 4 months ago. And last September, so 3 months after the tender was announced, the final winner of the tender, these guys gave up. And the same happened with number two. And in the end, the bread was given to tender number three, but for that 32% discount to the original winner's offer. Okay, locations. Merlin assets are very well positioned in the most important logistics areas in both Madrid and Barcelona. In Madrid speaking, they are concentrating in the A2 and also A4 highways. A2 is the most important logistics corridor for the city. It communicates to the rich northeast, Catalonia, and have also Zaragoza in the midway. Zaragoza is a hub connecting the Mediterranean and the Cantabrian Sea in the north. It is near the airport. It has railways and road infrastructures. It has industry, space for workers to live. It's a good location for both national and last mile distribution. Barcelona assets are unique, are just a side port, 2 kilometers away the airport, and very close to city center. So from those locations, the operators can attend international, national, and last mile trade. The largest asset in Barcelona is their 48.5% stake in Salt Port, which is a 10-year concession where they're partnering with the local port authority. And Merlin manages 100% of that asset. Looking to the future, we need to also look at the past because Merlin bought very cheap and strategic land 5-7 years ago. And now is developing that step by step. They have plans to develop more than 700,000 square meters for the coming 4 years. And they have a clear advantage over those buying today. This land, by the way, is registered at book value in Merlin's valuation. We're also asset value reported, okay? There is a need for good assets. It's not only e-commerce growing, but there are many old assets that not fit for new logistic operators. They don't have the appropriate length, high parking lots and landing gates are not appropriate for to quickly manage a high volume of trucks or delivery vans. Lastly, let's go through the data centers business. First consideration here is that the Iberian Peninsula is the closest point to America from Europe, and it's also key to connect with Western North Africa. Consider also that Spain has one of the best fiber networks in the world. Therefore, there are several important data infrastructure projects under development that will land in the region shortly. But the region lacks data centers. Current market size is smaller than many individual projects in other countries. I read many in other European countries and a lot in the US of more than 100 megawatts alone. So we don't get to that number joining all the data centers in the region. Announced price for the midterm is a small number if compared to other markets. London alone is supposed to have more than 800 megawatts installed capacity. So we're talking here of 300 megawatts for the coming 3-4 years. Demand is increasing locally. Cloud storage and cloud computing are just becoming mainstream in Spain. The EU is providing funds to support company digitalization efforts for this end. Data center business is a good example of Nordine's management imagination to improve asset quality. These guys were looking for options for industrial land in their portfolio that was non-core and to try to extract the highest value possible. Given they had no expertise in the area, they went to the US looking for know-how. They partnered with a company whose name is Andy Avor, whose founders sold their business a few years ago to Macquarie. These guys signed a non-compete agreement in the US, but not in Europe. So with their help, they identify good land plots ideal for data centers. They set up a 50-50 joint venture to design and operate those data centers, with NDA were bringing all the technical expertise and leading cooling and energy efficiency tech. Merlin will continue owning 100% of the asset. Okay, the property will be to Merlin. We know this is a hot market somewhere in other countries, but not here and still far to be. It is an underserved growing market in Iberia, so yields are very attractive and lease terms are pretty long term. Moving to risks, I will share in the two most significant risks we see here. To our end, the most challenging aspect for the company is handling a high lease maturity concentration in 2023, a year with clouds, with important macro uncertainties, which could lead to reduced occupancy, higher incentives, driving net rents and profits down. Well, unfortunately for Invexcel, for my family and my friends, we don't have the answer on what is going to happen with the economy. So we concentrate with the lease maturities and the tools the company may use to mitigate those risks coming from those lease maturities. Merlin's average lease terms are short. It has to do with how base lease rent terms work in Spain. Let me highlight you this is report this number reported is first is to first contractual grade. Okay, it's not behavioral, it's not the full contract. In some other countries, you see a lot of contracts for 10, 15, even 20 years. It's not the case in Spain. That's why it's shorter, as you may see, but important is also to see the renewal experience, which is quite positive for Merlin. It is about 80% historically. As you see, just about 25% of rents will reach first break in 2023. Shopping centers maturities are especially concentrated next year, and that is a consequence of commercial policies related to COVID that will be maturing. Okay. What may happen if things go really bad short term? Well, we make some assumptions based on the company's renewal rates and experience. For the office portfolio, we also think of the potential impact of a large increase in unemployment. For example, what may happen if 1 million of workers lose their jobs? That translates into unemployment rate in Spain of 17%. Well, we know that approximately 20% of workers are blue collars in our country, of which 80% work in Madrid and Barcelona, two markets where Merlin has more or less a 6% market share. And considering the density in their offices, I already told you it's 9 square meters per employee, we get to some 86,000 square meters of further vacant space. So it is reducing occupancy by 7 percentage points. We also look at the past, no? Metrovacesa at acquisition in 2016. Occupancy was 76% but it cannot be compared because first, Merlin has sold many of the really non-core, not good assets. And second, but something is very important, Metrovacesa by the time was a company that was run by its creditors, by the banks. And they wanted to sell the assets as soon as possible. And they were expending as less as possible to for several years. So it was an undermanaged portfolio. And the numbers, you can see those numbers. Then after Merlin began to own the assets and manage those assets, it quickly ran up. For logistics, we're not so optimistic as consensus because consumption could be reduced. Logistics for e-commerce, by the way, has very tight margins. So profitability issues may arise. Even more considering all these well-known issues of reverse logistics. And for shopping center, we just go very negative, just to be prudent. Cards to play for Merlin. Well, number one is locations. Mainly, they have mainly very good locations across the board. Number two from the market is supply. We still see healthy supply. Almost zero in shopping centers and still not bad logistics. We need to consider that supply is likely to be reduced if things turn bad because in the last years, many private equity firms have been very active with highly leveraged projects, possible only with the very low interest rates of the previous years. So it seems it won't be the case in the coming future. Tenant profile is also important. Merlin is exposed to large companies with higher bargaining power, but also scale to go through a bad cycle. An office specifically, we feel that there's some caution because the average rent is 8% below market average. So market rents need to be reduced up to that point for Merlin beginning to suffer. Another important consideration, very important, is that rents are linked to inflation in Spain. We are been suffering high single-digit inflation, low two-digit, well, from 8 to 10%, something like that in 2022. We don't know what's going to happen in 2023, but we don't see inflation recovering low single digits by next year. So we really don't see the company transferring 100% of inflation. We see them open to negotiate with tenants in exchange for longer leases. And it's something similar to what they already successfully did with shopping centers in 2020 and 2021. Another important stuff is there's a good pipeline of high quality assets with high pre-let rates. This will contribute to mitigate vacancy issues and reductions in rents. Last but not least, on risk management is the liability side of the balance sheet. This is not an issue for this company. It enjoys good loan to value, low fixed rate, very important, fixed rates and very low. And they have liquidity to manage 2023 maturities. Now let's move on to how we see Merlin's valuation. We use three different approaches here, nothing very scientific, to be frank. First approach to get some flavor on valuation is how it compares to private transactions. So as a family office, we are pitched with many real estate deals in the private market almost every week, really. And at the first sight, we found some disconnection between private and public market here. So we do some very quick exercise. Beginning with current stock price, implied discount to gross asset value. And we use very prudent price assumptions on different office exposures. And we get to an implied valuation of Madrid's prime office, which is 3,000 euros per square meter. That is far to those 10 to 12,000 euros per square meter paid in the private market. So given that, we continue to see the company through other angles. Angle number two is to adjust company NAV. report to NAV is based on valuations made from specialists. We all know how these guys work. They don't see things through the cycle. Actually, they tend to be very pro-cyclical. So as yields have compressed for years, we go and apply discounts per each asset base based on our vacancy assumptions for a bad economy and even worse, even leaving aside the strengths explained before. We give no value to new projects, no value to sell off bad assets, and no value for the financial value of inflation-linked contracts. DCN, this large project in the north area of Madrid, we don't give value to that because it's too far in the future. And we get to NAV that is reduced by 30%, but still it's offering a decent margin of safety and potential for good profits. Lastly, we use a returns approach. Based on prudent rent assumptions, basically we take 2022 as a base for gross rental income. This is something that is not very fair assumption because 2022 is still so some incentives because of COVID and some assets that were refurbished and being delivered during the year. In our number, we take out the BBVA portfolio that was sold back in June. But well, we prefer to be prudent. The rents that will come will come due to major projects in the pipeline, we estimate those for 2027. I'm being very prudent we go prudent also on the already prudent CapEx assumption shared by the company. I say this is important because the company, we revisit the history, what the company says and what already happened later. You know? Many times the company say, well, we'll spend 60 million euros to deliver this building. In the end, they spend 55 million. So it's 5 million, you know, it's a lot of money, but if you accumulate those numbers, it creates value for shareholders. They usually try to go prudent on everything they do. We take equity capital or market value, and we get to a 9% leverage gross yield, considering this base year 2022 and considering the coming rents and investment needed, and some increase in debt to finance those projects. We move to 12.5% leverage gross yield in midterm, which seems to us attractive because it will incorporate inflation. Even more considering the majority of assets need no further investments to generate profits, and the company has low fixed rate leverage. And again, the company has plans to sell non-core assets, improving the returns on its invested capital, a number we're not including here. Well, as a conclusion, we agree on a discount for this company for geography because it has shopping centers, because of rent maturity, because potential deal expansion, but we disagree on the size. This is a company that has good asset quality. It has excellent locations. It has growth prospects, which is something difficult to find in mature markets like ours. It has a strong balance sheet, a very talented team, and it's been offered at a very attractive valuation to our end. So that's all for me, John. Back to you.
Thank you so much, Illyrio, for this in-depth presentation. Really appreciate how you laid out what the company does, where the value comes from, and then also the undervaluation here. I'm wondering if the current discount to NAV is materially wider than it's typically been in the past?
Yes, it is. It always trades at 10 to 20% range. And now it is materially wider. Yeah, it's more than 50%.
In terms of capital allocation here, any Anything we should note on the choices management has to either return capital, reinvest? What do you expect to see on that front going forward?
Well, the number, action number one, capital allocation, is rotating assets, is selling those not really good non-core assets, tag as non-core assets, and reinvesting that money in really good quality assets, generating good rents. As you may see, they're targeting something around 7 to 10% yield on cost. They look for stuff that is not crowded, where they see opportunities. A good example is what they have been doing with the logistics. You know, they went for logistics. First, they bought options on land. They executed those options a few years later, and they're developing step by step at a really, really low cost. That land acquired some years ago, if you really were to mark it up to market value today, you will get automatically a plus 50%. They want rents to pay a good dividend. They have to pay a high dividend. They have to pay, well, it depends how you see that. Real estate guys see that from a fund from operation perspective. The REIT regime, fiscal regime in Spain, ask them to see them from the accounting profits according to Spanish legislation, but they have to pay a very high dividend, which is more or less a 5-6% yield. The other option they have is to buy back shares, but they don't want to do that today because they feel that that will increase a loan to value, and they prefer to. They feel they can deploy capital in the market at very good, attractive discounts.
Wonderful. Well, I will leave it there, Illyrio. I would just encourage MOI Global members to feel free to reach out with any further thoughts or questions. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us again this year and share your research with the community. We truly appreciate it.
Thanks to you, John. And here I am, open to all MOI members for whatever I could be of help.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. All the best.